Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. It is our great pleasure to be with Jeffrey Toobin, who has written The Nine, Inside the Secret World of the Supreme Court at a very important time in history. We were talking about the long sweep of history, and I will get back to that after you two talk about Miranda, but that history piece is so relevant, it's quite exciting.
Well, these are actors, I mean, Miranda, the latter Miranda, and both of them, really, are agents in history in some very interesting ways. They may be representative, they may just be symbolic, but they both seem to be reasonable symbols within this context.
Well, you just raise an interesting point that, you know, how much does the court reflect the body politic? And I don't know what the court does. I'm not sure where it stands now. But Sandra Day O'Connor, who really dominated the court for her last 10 years on the bench, had this extraordinary political acumen, I think, who would sometimes drive her colleagues crazy because she seemed to view the job more as a politician than as a justice.
Which she had experience being.
Right. She was the majority leader of the Arizona State Senate. And she would lead the court to compromise positions that were astonishingly faithful to where most people were. Now, she's a supporter of abortion rights early in pregnancy, but approved things like parental consent laws. She approved the use of affirmative action in admissions, but in a limited way without quotas. Over and over again, you could see O'Connor with this remarkable radar for the political center. I'm not sure there's a member of the conservative majority now who has that kind of priority.
Well, Kennedy probably thinks he is.
Kennedy thinks he is, but I mean, he is not, whatever else he is, he doesn't have the common touch. I mean, this is a guy who was very very sure of his own.
You mean the red carpet and the stars?
Yeah,
very,
very sort of full of pomp and circumstance and has never been elected to anything. I think one of the unfortunate aspects of the court is that the backgrounds are also similar. This is the first time in history that all nine justices had served as judges previously. Never happened before. The court that decided Brown v. Board of Education in 1954, not one of the justices had been a judge previously. I think some sort of mix of professional backgrounds would serve the court better rather than as sort of the top of the civil service chain.
It's also the ideological representation that you document wonderfully in The Nine about how it isn't just the Supreme Court, it's the full federal judiciary that the political right wing, the conservative movement, have made it a real priority to make sure that their perspective was represented on the bench. And then we hear over and over again, oh, well, we don't want activist judges.
Well, again, the nomenclature is a political weapon. And conservatives have captured judicial restraint and judicial activism, and they're for the former and against the latter. But in fact, when you look at a case like the Seattle and Louisville mm-hmm. school cases, where the democratic process worked and the schools were desegregated as the community wanted, the conservatives on the Supreme Court said, no, we know better. Now, is that restraint? That sounds like activism to me. Another decision was the Kelo decision, which was the eminent domain case, where in the city of New London, Democratic elected legislators said, look, we think this urban development program is good for the community. We're going to take a couple people's houses and turn them over to a private developer. Well, and the liberals, Justice Stevens' opinion, said, well, we're going to defer to the political majority. We're not going to get in the way. Conservatives were furious. Well, that was actually, it seemed like judicial restraint. So, it all depends on whose ox is gored, I think, how these terms
yeah,
work.
There's one of the major subcurrents, particularly from the conservative perspective, is to go back to the Constitution more or less as it was created.
The originalists,
what John Dean calls a fundamentalist. Mm-hmm. What is interesting about O'Connor as a representative of the court for that long period of time, and it really is the most powerful, influential person on the court, is that she evolved. The laws have evolved since 1787. The country has evolved since 1787. And I find myself wondering how serious this originalist perspective is, or is it a rationalization for undoing decisions that have been made, particularly those starting in the New Deal, coming into the, you know, into the 80s, that they just didn't like?
Well, I don't doubt that it's sincere. I mean, I think the justices identified with originalism, chiefly Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas, are sincere. But there are, as Justice Breyer has written in a recent book called Active Liberty, a lot of problems with the originalist idea. First of all, you know, the framers of the Constitution didn't seem to think that their intent should control. Also, how do you interpret what their intent was? They also intended, at the time of the Bill of Rights, that slavery exist. Is that something we're supposed to honor? But obviously there were the later amendments. How do you interpret the intent of the amendments on top of the intent of the original Constitution? I mean, it gets very complicated and probably impossible. But the subtext of originalism is a conservative political agenda. It means the Constitution does not protect the right to abortion. It means that the government should not engage in any sort of racial categorizing at all, even if it's designed to help people who've been discriminated against. So, you know, yes, it is true. I mean, I don't doubt the sincerity of the originalists, but let's not kid ourselves about whose interests are served by originalism.
Which takes me to a very interesting line you have in the Nine, where you say that the conservative movement's agenda, as reflected in the Court, if I understood you rightly, is abortion and everything else.
Well,
where does women's rights come into this? Ruth, I'd never seen it before, but Justice Ginsburg, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, saying, guys, this isn't about equal protection or privacy. This is about equality.
Right. Well, you know, one of the criticisms of Roe v. Wade has always been that Harry Blackmun wrote the original decision as a right of privacy decision, which is not mentioned in the Constitution, and the decision is actually even written as if it's the doctor's right to perform the abortion. Ruth Ginsburg, even before she was a judge, had said, look, I believe that the Constitution protects a woman's right to choose abortion, but under a different theory, that if you force women to continue their pregnancies against their wills, they are not being allowed to be equal in the society. So she has a much more simple equal protection argument. Interestingly, in the last abortion case that the liberals lost, four justices embraced Ginsburg's rationale rather than the privacy rationale. So if somehow the Democrats get more appointments, maybe the right to choose will be anchored differently in the future on the equality theory rather than the privacy theory.
I was very interested to hear John Dean, whose book we happened to be reading and with whom we were in conversation in the last 10-day slot, the tremendous changes that would take place if, in fact, this became a court dominated by what he calls judicial fundamentalists. But it's real easy to just say fundamentalists. And when we look at the large world, and people, especially in America, get all kind of frowny about, oh, well, there are fundamentalists out there. Well, shouldn't we be looking at home as well as abroad to people who react in fear in ways that are very traditional? That's the nicest way I can say fundamentalist.
But I think this is a real political debate in our country. There are a lot of people who think traditional values are good. Republicans have won lots of elections in recent years by appealing to traditional values. You know, religious fundamentalism in America is something that a lot of people embrace and think is a great thing. So I don't think it's fair to sort of apply a label and say, well, it's automatically bad.
It is important to apply a label and say, do you want this?
Absolutely. I mean, that's you know, one of my main purposes in this book is to say, look, these are choices. There is no such thing as law independent of ideology, independent of politics. These are decisions that the society is going to make.
And individuals are very important.
But right.
This is not neutral.
One of the things that John Roberts said in his confirmation hearings, which I really disagree with, is that the Supreme Court justices are just like baseball umpires. All they're doing are calling balls and strikes. No, they're more like the commissioner of baseball. They're making the rules. Now, they can make good rules or bad rules, but they are making rules. And that's what I think is, no one should be mistaken about that.
It's very clarifying reading this. There's a tendency to, and lawyers frequently will do this, judges will do this, to assert that what they are doing is uncovering the truth, is embedded in the law, or at the very least taking the original intent and applying it in specific circumstances, and it is essentially, not their words, but a scientific process. You take the words, you apply it. And that has never been the case, and it never will be the case. It is what makes democracy so important, and the active engagement of people across the spectrum, not just at the court, but also as voters, as jurists, the whole range of participation.
When you're talking about constitutional law, I am very uncomfortable with the uses of the term right and wrong. Outside of a certain sort of basic agreement that everybody has, they're not about right and wrong. These are choices. These are largely political choices that the justices make. And I think we need some truth in labeling. Now, you may agree or disagree with them, but it's really it's about choices, not right and wrong.
And well, the choice I'm making right now is to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Jeffrey Toobin. Be with us.